Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today, we're going to be discussing the ongoing war in Sudan, particularly focusing on the advancements made by the Rapid Support Force in Kordofan and certain other areas in Sudan, as well as the role of external actors in the conflict. I'm joined by Dr. Matteo Gutterland. Matteo was a guest in our previous episode on the political tension between Somalia and Ethiopia. Matteo is a very experienced political scientist and international relations scholar that focuses on countries, cases such as Chad, Sao Tome and Principe, Palestine, Sudan, amongst many others. Matthew, it's good to have you back. I'm very happy to be back, and I look forward to our conversation today. So let me start off by this. We had 4 months ago, we had, I don't know if you know, Cameron Hudson. Is one of the experts on Sudan come on the episode to talk about the war in Sudan. But 4 months down the line, we've seen this conflict has, within a space of 1 year, it's taken several thousands of lives, nearly 15,000, you know, if I'm not mistaken, and displaced over 7 million. And it's still, you know, intense. So can you just start off by, you know, telling the readers what is the situation in Sudan at the moment? Why is the conflict still intense?
It's actually grown to be the third deadliest war in the world right now. Estimates put it at around 13,000 deaths, but it's a conservative estimate. For example, the Mesalit in Darfur have at least 20,000 deaths as a result from the genocide by the RSF. Yes, this particular civil war, because Sudanese history sadly has a history of coups and civil wars, is particularly extensive and intensive. It has reached regions that were not touched by war for the past 130 years. The reason is this time it's a fight to the death between two factions that used to rule the country and which are more or less evenly matched. And on the background of this death match, there is unresolved issues in Darfur, in Kordofan, in the marginalized peripheries, as we say, between the Arabs, the Arab elites, and the non-Arabs, the so-called African ethnicities. And so, yes, that is the recipe for this disaster.
Quite interesting. You mentioned something about the both the Sudanese armed forces and the RSF being evenly matched. And when we look at the literature on how conflicts end, it's always very interesting when they say when one party has is stronger, the conflict is more likely to end on time. So, you know, I think that proves that point. But this even match, or this kind of like strength that they display, how did they, I know with RSF, you know, with the former president, you know, trying to prove the distance and then, you know, empowering them and then the Sudanese armed forces. What other factors have made them strong? Is fueling or keeping, you know, I know definitely they will need weapons, it might be also experience. What are these other factors making them, that is strengthening each of these parties?
There are mainly two, which is, as you say, the RSF are one of the former pillars of the regime, of the Bashir regime, the former dictatorial regime by Omar al-Bashir. They are the new name of the Janjaweed militia, which carried out the genocide in Darfur in 20 years ago, in 2003. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, they're supported by the United Arab Emirates. They're armed and supplied by the Emirates with the help of some of Sudan's neighbors. And these are the two main factors why the RSF are able to carry on a war for so long and with so much success so far.
You mentioned RSF being supported by UAE and the neighbors, and you know how that has influenced the source. So we'll come back to that. But how about the Sudanese armed forces? Are they getting any external support themselves?
They both Hemed Diya, the head of the RSF, and Burhan, the head of the SAF, had been careful to keep ties with all of Sudan's former allies, partners, possible threats such as Israel or the US, and most of Sudan's neighbors, the countries of the Sahel, the countries of East Africa, they each entertained good relations with everyone, just in case this might happen, because there is a structural lack of trust between the RSF and the SAF, and this is really the main reason behind the war. And yes, the SAF at this point enjoys the support of Iran, Russia, Ukraine mainly, also Eritrea on the Red Sea. Egypt, we have talked a lot about Egypt favoring the SAF, but so far they have proved to be prudent and pragmatic in this conflict.
If you talk about Russia and Ukraine, let's stay on that for a minute. It did appear that in the past Russia was a bit in neutral. Did the Russia-Ukraine war change anything? I've read somewhere as well where it looks like Ukraine is supporting RSF now. What role is that war playing?
It doesn't seem to make sense. In fact, both Hemeti and Burhan are heavily pro-Russian. They have been for a while, Ukraine has seen an opportunity to turn that in their favor, to deliver grain to Port Sudan, to the SAF, deliver drones to the SAF, to bring special forces in Omdurman, in Khartoum, in support of the SAF, and thus to strike the Wagner forces, the former Wagner forces, the Afrika Korps, and RSF, which are presented by Ukraine as pro-Russian terrorist forces, when in fact both the RSF and the SAF are pro-Russian. But they are trying to turn the situation to their advantage and to turn it into a propaganda stage to show Africa that they care and that they can turn things around better than the Russians, and then they can expose Russian crimes in Africa and so on. So far, it doesn't seem like this is a winning bet for Ukraine, to be fair. And Ukraine has formalized its support for Buran last September. In October, Iran has normalized relations with the SAF, with Sudan, with the official Sudan captured by the SAF, the state captured by the SAF. And Iran delivers drones to Russia that are striking Ukraine right now. So already they were unlikely allies of Buran against Hemeti. And now they are in this position to be both allies to Iran and Russia against Hemeti in Sudan, which is,
it looks quite complicated. So where does Ukraine stand? Is Ukraine supporting SAF or is it supporting RSF?
Ukraine is supporting the SAF and is portraying the RSF as a pro-Russian terrorist force allied with Wagner. When in fact, Wagner and Russia are pretty pragmatic in this war. And sure, in the first months of the war, they have supported the RSF rather extensively, but they are on both sides, supporting both sides rather strongly. And recently, Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, has visited Port Sudan and promised uncapped military aid to the SAF. Mm. So. This is a strange situation for Ukraine.
This does seem to me like, if you look at during the Cold War, let me look at Nigeria for instance. Let me digress a bit, and look at the civil war that Nigeria had in the 60s, and look at how for the 3 years you had that civil war, it was prolonged by the support from external forces, but either the support or the ambiguous relationship. I think Russia had similar ambiguous relationship or ambiguous support during that, or even the UK as well. You know, they never wanted to support, and then you support this, and then that ambiguity. How do you think all of this is leading to the prolongation of the war in Sudan?
Well, clearly. No country at this point is willing to condemn either the RSF or the ASF with sufficient force. There have been sanctions from the EU, there have been sanctions from the UK, from the US, but they have not been far-reaching enough for one reason, which is they are still hoping that mediation might work to end the conflict. And they hope to bring Hemeti and Buran against around the same table, perhaps in Jeddah, perhaps somewhere else, which are pipe dreams, which are very unlikely to work. But that is hindering international pressure on the warring factions. And so far, that is contributing to the intensity, to the extension, and to the durability of the war.
We'll come back to mediation international in a minute. But let's go to what has changed, because it looks like the RSF is having some strategic advancements in some places. What has caused that? What is attributed to that sources that they're enjoying in certain places?
This is the SAF have wasted resources in counteroffensives that did not work in resupplying besieged garrisons in Kordofan, in Darfur, besieged cities like El Obeid, like El Fashir, and counteroffensives in many directions around Khartoum, in Omdurman especially, to retake Al Jazeera from three directions, from the west, the east, the south. And they tried another counteroffensive in the direction of El Obeid and Umm Ruwaba, and all have failed so far. And for the past 5 months, fighting has not come to a standstill, but territorial gains have stopped. But now the SAF is exhausted by these operations, and the RSF have taken advantage. They have they already tried to take Sinnatown in December, and now they have tried another maneuver. They have taken another route by the west of Sinnar. They have grazed Sinnar, and instead of taking Sinnatown, where the SAF had sent reinforcements, they went to the capital Sinjar, which was under defended, and they took the city and the garrison. The same happened in Kordofan, where the SAF had to retreat and leave capital Al Fula under defended, and the RSF took the town. The SAF is overextended right now. The front is overextended, and that is what contributes to RSF success for now.
Do you think it might turn the tide of the conflict? This girl. Do you think it's minimal? How? What is the impact of this sources? Can it turn the tide of the conflict?
Clearly. Some victories, like El Fula, are purely symbolic. They do not bring very much strategic value, except to free fighters from the RSF to fight on other fronts. But this recent development, the invasion of Sennar, and it seems that the RSF have moved up to the border of the Blue Nile state further south, and they have crossed the Blue Nile. They are now threatening Kedaref to the east, and that is a major development. This is the agricultural, the economic center of Sudan with Al Jazeera, and this is major development. And this is also very bad news for the Sudanese population. Food production has already fallen by half since the start of the war, and this will further worsen the famine in Sudan. This will further help the Sudanese economic collapse, for sure.
Very, very interesting. I was going to say the impact on the civilians, besides the displacement. You just mentioned the economic toll on there. But we're then looking at, if I look at still on that tide, because again, and as much as it sounds sad, you know, we have to also look at what could help change, make it like a very strong change. So if you look at the way SAF, because it looks like SAF as well has, you know, major advancement or major hold on certain strategic locations. So, but what could, in your opinion, could permanently, effectively, or strongly change the dynamics of the conflict? What does each of them have to like do to change the dynamics of the conflict?
The center of the conflict since the beginning is capital Khartoum, control for Khartoum. Mm-hmm. If the SAF managed to take over Omdurman, to take over Bari, which they tried, they make grinding progress, but they make progress. if they manage to reinforce the besieged central command in Khartoum, who knows? Maybe it would change the tide. That is the most important stake in this war, and clearly, the urgency is also to retake Sana'a and Al Jazeera, because RSF rule means widespread looting, means economic collapse. They are unable or unwilling or both to administer these regions effectively, and this spells disaster for the Sudanese population. So that is where the SAF efforts must be concentrated. But that is easy to say, because as you said, for example, in El Fasher, for the longest time, this was a refuge for the Darfuri population. There are a wide number of displaced persons in El Fasher. They thought they were safe. They thought they were safe in El Fula. They thought they were safe in El Fasher. They thought they were safe even in Sennar or in Sinjar. Now it so happens that they're not. If tomorrow the RSF takes over El Fasher, there will be the genocide will take so much more lives than they already did.
Let me touch on that quickly. So we beginning of the war, you know, we say, you know, we know clearly, maybe I might be wrong, that the driver for this is power, control of power. But there's also other things, you know, like you just mentioned, that genocide, ethnicity. We've seen ethnicity play either you mentioned earlier when you first started the Arabs and the non-Arabs. Can you expand on that dynamics?
There was an independent report recently by the Raoul Wallenberg Center for Human Rights. And what they say is very clear, that they say this is the same genocide as 20 years ago, which is going on, which is carrying on, by the same perpetrators against the same victims. This is the RSF or supported or supporting Dagara militias from North Darfur, which have had conflicts with the Fur, the Mesalit, and the Zagawa in Darfur for decades, and have been supported by the former Bashir regime to eradicate these potential opponents in 20 years ago. And now the RSF are encouraging the same, for basically the same reason, which is to maintain political power for Darfur, control Darfur in its entirety. And it means giving free rein to genocide. We have seen dozens of towns and villages burned to the ground. We have seen at least 20,000 Mesalit dead, which is more than the total estimate for deaths as a result of the war by independent NGOs. And this will only get worse if the RSF are taking control of North Darfur, which is happening as we speak. They are already taking control of the North Darfur desert, and they are already tightening the siege in El Fasher and making progress in the city.
So it does look bleak if the RSF takes control then.
I'm sorry?
It does look bleak.
If the RSF takes displaced people in El Fasher and for the Zagawa, the Fur in North Darfur, yes, at this moment. It doesn't seem like the SAF is able to contain RSF advance in North Darfur or in El Fasher. And it seems for now it is only a matter of time until the RSF are taking control of the city.
So go on.
I'm sorry. There is a stronghold by the SLM Al-Nur, a last rebel stronghold, which is neutral at this moment, in central Darfur. But until which point in time, that is another issue. But that is one of the last hopes for the displaced peoples of Darfur.
But as I've heard, I was going to say something, but let me just quickly touch on it. The SPLM, no, which is like independent rebel. I've also had some kind of collaboration between them and RSF. Is that true?
No, they don't have collaboration with the RSF. Everyone which is either pro-peace or anti-SAF is branded as pro-RSF by the SAF.
Okay.
But the SPLMN so far has played its own game, has extended its territory against the SAF, against the RSF, sometimes with ad hoc agreements, sometimes with the support of the SAF, like in Dilin, where they have expelled the RSF from Dilin with the support of the SAF. But they are playing their own game in this war. They are extending their territory and consolidating their control over this territory. And so far, that is rather good news, so to say, when we watch at what's happening in other parts of Kordofan.
I see what you mean there, because it means there's no one unified front, and it could be positive, it could be good news, and it also can be bad news. But let me ask this: besides Russian and Ukraine support, we can see a clear motivation behind these two people and the strategic. And then again, we could see Chad as well, and why Chad might support the RSF. How about the other countries, the external countries? What are their motivations? What are their interests?
Russia is playing a very murky game in Sudan. Wagner has been there since 2017, mostly to exploit the gold in North Darfur, but also elsewhere in Sudan. And they have collaborated with both the army and the RSF, including during the war, but they are keeping a low profile. And Russia, until recently, Russia has kept a low profile too, but has supported both parties. Mm-hmm. And now they have announced uncapped military aid to Buran. It is unknown how much military aid they are really able to provide the SAF. They have said it would be qualitative and not quantitative, which says a lot. Ukraine is striking Wagner, striking the RSF, but they are taken by their own game. At this point, they are serving the Russians to strike the Russians, which is a contradictory situation. As for the RSF and Chad and also Marshal Haftar in Libya, the private chief of staff of the president of Chad, Deby, is a cousin of Emeti. It's a cousin of Emeti from the Rizegat clan, the same clan as Emeti. There is an issue for Chad. There have been even rumors of a coup against Deby because of his support for the RSF, because the RSF are carrying a genocide against the Zagawa in Darfur, and the Zagawa, Deby is a Zagawa. The Zagawa are the power base for Deby in Chad. And so there have been discontent among his own power base within his own clan against this policy of support to the RSF. The Zagawa in Darfur, obviously, are fighting the RSF at this point. They are defending themselves against genocide.
So it does seem like this could also have a strong regional impact in terms of a spillover effect in the region. It does present that danger. How does it spread to all the region? You know, we've seen the case of Chad, because I've also seen where Kenya as well, as presenting itself as a neutral mediator, has also been accused of
Kenya and Djibouti are trying to mediate this conflict within IGAD, within the regional within the regional framework. So far to no avail. There has been a diplomatic spat between Burhan and William Ruto. I don't see these mediation efforts going anywhere so far. But there are clear dangers to the region. The RSF are supported by Marshal Haftar in eastern Libya, by Chad. They are recruiting in Central African Republic. They are recruiting in South Sudan. They have enlisted the support of South Sudanese rebel general, General Bwai. They have supplies through South Sudan, supplies in weapons, in fuel. This is a worrying development for the region, clearly. South Sudan and Central African Republic are already very fragile. They didn't need this at their door. The South Sudanese economy is almost entirely relying on oil, which is going through Sudan to Port Sudan. And so far, there has been even an accident that has cut off almost half of South Sudanese oil exports, which spells economic collapse for South Sudan in the midterm. And even to the east, Ethiopia is currently trying to retake the so-called Fashaga Triangle at the border. The Amhara have invaded, so to say, the Fashaga Triangle, which is for now held by the SAF since the Tigray War. And there are camps in Eritrea. There are camps, training camps, for the SAF-aligned rebels. So the whole region, except for Egypt so far, surprisingly, the whole region is engulfed and entertains some link with the warring factions.
It's quite sad, because we before I come to the last question, I want to look at this. I want to look at it in a more ambitious way. So we look at Sahel. We see what's going on in the Sahel, and we see, you know, the coups and the jihadist group. We're seeing what's going on in Sudan, how this is spilling over in the region. Well, we've always known that East Africa and the Horn of Africa is always very volatile in terms of like any conflict in one of those countries is always have a strong regional impact in whether it be in Uganda, whether it's in Somalia, it spreads all over. So it's going on in Somalia and Ethiopia as well. And then, you know, we look at how Russia is, the Wagner Go Africa military corps is spreading wide in Africa. Do you see any sense where this could be, whether internally or externally, Africa is becoming a stage for some sort of battleground, either being a new Cold War? I know some people have moved that
clearly. Many countries are on the offensive, mostly diplomatically or economically. They're on the offensive in Africa because they see the potential, the economic potential, but also the diplomatic potential within the UN, for example, in support of China or Russia, but also the potential for the energetic transition. they need to control the raw materials in Africa, in the DRC or elsewhere. And Russia clearly also has a name, which is to expel the West from Africa, which is to expel France, to expel the US, but also other Western countries from Africa, not just to take their place, but simply for them not to be there anymore. And that is why they are developing this anti-colonial narrative, which it goes with African youth, obviously. And yes, this is a worrying development, and this is accelerating. Sudan is part of this wider trend.
So if we look at it, like, what do you see? Before I come to ask, let me just ask this. So the West itself, we've seen beyond, you mentioned earlier on that the EU, in the UK, the US have given sanctions or whatever. Besides that, are they directly involved in this, in the Sudanese civil war, in or any other kind
They are not. They are not rushing to get involved in any way, to be fair, except with sanctions. They had got involved in 20 years ago during the first part of the genocide by forcing, for example, ICC jurisdiction in Darfur when Sudan was not part of the Rome Statute, and they forced it into the hands of the ICC through the UN Security Council. At the time, with the support of Russia and China, or the abstention of Russia and China, which wouldn't be possible anymore. But we won't see this kind of involvement this time around. This is very unlikely. They are pressuring the Emirates. They are pressuring Egypt. They are pressuring whoever they can pressure, which is fueling the conflict. But so far, to no avail.
Interesting. Let me come to the last question, Matteo. What are the most? How do you see this conflict panning out, and what? How can it? So, first question is a multi-layer question. How do you see it panning out? Is there any prospect for peace and stability? If there is, how can that be achieved?
Sadly, I don't think this will be achieved through mediation, through diplomatic means. This has been tried again and again. There have been AU IGAD mechanism trying to look into this, a unified African mechanism looking into this. There has been Egypt's initiative with Sudan's neighbors trying to mediate the conflict. There has been, even Algeria has looked into this because the UN Special Envoy for Sudan is Algerian, and they have tried it. There have been secret talks in Bahrain. This and the efforts you mentioned from Djibouti, from Kenya, they have come to nothing, and it is unlikely so far, but it is very unlikely that this will come to anything this year, given the developments. Each faction is still convinced that they can win the war militarily, and so they will not sit at the same table. They lack the trust to do so anyway. They had signed last year, they had signed a declaration in Jeddah under US and Saudi pressure. And this was never enacted because there was never the trust necessary for this to be enacted, even if this was already very limited. And so I do not see an end to this conflict except through military means at this point. There are some wild cards which for a time were the Sudanese rebels, even if most of them now have aligned with the SAF, which were the Sudanese population, which is now exhausted by the revolution, by the coups, by the war. And more importantly at this point, foreign supporters to the warring factions. In particular, Emirati support to the RSF needs to stop, and Ukrainian support, Iranian support, Russian support to the SAF needs to stop immediately if you want this war to end. Because the RSF and the SAF are more or less evenly matched, even if the RSF are progressing right now on a number of fronts. And it is very unlikely that the RSF will take over all of Sudan anytime soon, including the north and the east, which is much more firmly in the hands of the SAF. And so foreign support needs to stop for the war to come to at least stall and allow for some kind of solution.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much, Mathilde. This is a very deep insight into this unfortunate war. And I agree with you. You know, a lot of the foreign or external support is sustaining this war, and that needs to be looked into for there to be a lasting solution. Well, thank you for coming again once again. You know, we really appreciate. Appreciate your insights as always, and we're very, very grateful to have you. You're now a friend of the podcast, and we'll keep in touch. And it goes. But thank you very much once again, Mathieu. I really appreciate. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in today to yet another inspiring, exciting episode. Help join me to, as usual, to thank our guest, Dr. Mathieu Gutterland, who has now returned, who was previously a guest on our episode 26. Check that out if you have not, on Somalia. Mathieu is a very experienced analyst. We're grateful for him, and I want to encourage you to join me once again next week for another episode. For now, stay cool and stay blessed, and I'll see you next week.